Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
Welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. Since Godzilla vs. Kong 2 is coming out in theaters, I will take the full blame on this, thought that it'd be a good idea to visit the original Godzilla vs. King Kong called King Kong vs. Godzilla from 1962. I was actually very surprised as I was watching the movie to find out that, similar to a lot of other Godzilla movies, that there is actually a deeper meaning to what we're watching in King Kong versus Godzilla.
What's that, Matt?
Well, let's dive into it, right? So here's a couple quick facts about this movie, right? This was both the third Godzilla and the third King Kong movie to ever be made. King Kong and Son of Kong both came out in 1933, They did nothing until this movie, almost three decades later. Godzilla did the first two movies, and then they didn't make any movie for about 7 years. It also is the first time that the creatures were ever in color. So the project began when the stop-motion animator Willis O'Brien, who worked on the first King Kong, came up with an idea for Kong battling a giant Frankenstein monster. And whoa, he gave the outline to the producer, John Beck, to develop it.
Whoa.
Yeah, he gave it to John Beck to produce it. Behind Willis O'Brien's back, though, and without his knowledge, Beck actually gave the project to Toho to produce the film, and replacing the Frankenstein monster with Godzilla instead, and basically scrapping the original idea. When this movie came out, it was the second highest grossing Japanese film in history, and as of 2024, remains the most attended Godzilla film in Japanese history. And the success of this movie is what inspired Soho to make more Godzilla movies. Wow. This was kind of like, if this fails, we did three movies and we're done.
It is kind of crazy how early on it is in the sort of whole realm of, both of these characters, but primarily Godzilla. Like,
because you think
Godzilla,
that they would do like Godzilla versus all these random creatures, and then someone say like, "Why does it fight King Kong?"
Blows my fucking mind. Crazy. I had no idea. I didn't do any research for this. Matt is the one, for the listeners, Matt is, he's going to be the teacher, and we are the pupils today. Yeah. And damn, you are starting it off strong today.
I'm already thirsting for more knowledge, Matt.
What are you drinking over there?
This actually could have gone with our last episode too, honestly, because it's Toxic Earth, which I've had before. It's a double IPA brewed with honey and matcha, so it pours green. And just for those Patreon viewers,
hell yeah,
oh yeah, There we go. So I could have done this for Ghostbusters as well. This is a terrible pour because I'm also trying
to. That is the worst pour I've ever seen.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to sit there for a while. I'm going to drink out of the can.
Does it taste good?
So I haven't had this new batch. So I had the one before, and I want to say it was for Prophecy. I'm not positive. Somebody can tell me otherwise.
Was I as blown away during Prophecy as I am for right now?
Oh. No, you weren't. At least not that I recall. It's fine. The matcha just makes it a little chalky, you know, but the honey kind of smooths it out. But it's, I mean, it tastes like a double IPA that they made very
with
drinkable.
Matcha?
I mean, it's almost 10%.
Oh, Jesus.
Or it's 9.3. It's somewhere. It's 9.3.
You'll be sleeping good.
It's on the lower end of 10.
Well, I also have something that is probably on the lower end of 10. I have a King Kong. There's a mixed drink called a King Kong.
Great.
Megan, I was like, I don't know what to do because I had my idea for Ghostbusters, and I was like, and I'm all out of ideas. And she was like, and I was like, well, what about like a tiki drink or something like that? And she was like, let me Google it. And she found a couple different kinds, and one had like creme de banana in it. And I'm like, that is no fucking way.
No.
And then she found this. This King Kong is from Epicurious, and let me read you the ingredients. It's a really good drink. Now, I did do a couple, one quick substitution. So it's gin, fresh lemon juice, Benedictine, and then creme de noyau. Do you know what that is? Mm-hmm. Such as Tempest Fugit or something like that. But it's made with cherry pits. So Megan said, she read up on it and she said, oh, maybe tastes a little bit like amaretto. And so I was like, oh, I'll use amaretto because I have amaretto. It is a dangerously good drink. Like, I'm not going to drink all of this because I would be on the floor. It's
Megan
so
on deck.
Good.
Is she on deck for the rest of that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bless her.
She took a taste and she was like, that's incredible. Because we don't really do mixed drinks anymore, which is just like she drinks wine and I drink like beer or you know, bourbon.
What kind of wine does she drink? You don't have to tell the
listener. She's a white wine. She likes Sauv Blanc. So we drink a lot of New Zealand Sauv Blancs.
Okay.
And she really likes rosé, dry rosés. So just,
okay.
And I'll drink dry, I'll drink the Sauv Blancs as well, just because.
I have something, okay, that's good to know.
He's making mental notes.
Yeah.
So you guys both watched this movie, and I want you to think about the movie when I tell you this next part about what the director's goal with this movie was. So the director, and this is the only time I'm going to attempt to say this name, Ishiro Honda wanted the theme of the movie to be a satire on the television industry in Japan. In April of 1962, TV networks and their various sponsors started to produce outrageous programming and publicity stunts in order to grab the audience's attention after two elderly viewers reportedly died at home while watching a violent wrestling match on their television.
Oh, shit. New Japan.
Various rating wars between networks and banal programming that followed this event caused a widespread debate over how TV would affect the Japanese culture. Honda stated, people were making big deals out of ratings, but my own view of TV shows was that they did not take the viewer seriously and that they took the audience for granted. So I decided to show that through the movie. And the reason I showed the monster battle through the prism of a ratings war was to depict the reality of what was happening in Japan at the time. He addressed this by also having a pharmaceutical company sponsor the TV show and going to extremes for the publicity stunt to gain more ratings by capturing a giant monster. He said, all a medicine company needs to do is just produce a good medicine. But the company doesn't think that way. They think that they can get ahead of their competitors if they can get a monster to promote their product. Early drafts of the script were sent back with notes from the studio asking that the monster's antics be as funny as possible. This comedic approach was embraced by the writers who wanted to appeal to the children's sensibilities and broaden the genre's audience. Much of the monster battle was filmed to contain a great deal of humor, but the approach was not favored by most of the effects crew, who couldn't believe some of the things that they were asked to do, such as having King Kong and Godzilla volley a giant boulder back and forth between each other.
No kidding.
Yeah. Since King Kong was seen as the bigger draw at the time and Godzilla was still considered a villain at this point in the series, the decision was made not only to give King Kong top billing, but also to present him as the winner of the cinematic fight. Despite this, there was a decades-long false rumor that Godzilla won in the Japanese edit of the film.
Like, did you think that there was going to be a winner going into this?
Well, because we've been trained by any other time that there's a versus movie that it's like a weird draw. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know I mean? Like, I couldn't help but
Jason, we don't get a winner, really. That's we get Jason coming out of the water with a head that winks. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I couldn't believe when we were 30 seconds out from the end of this movie, basically, and there really wasn't, it was at a minute and 30 seconds out from the end of this movie, and there wasn't a clear winner yet. They were still tumbling down the hill. This thing rips until the very end. and I think I wanted King Kong to win, so I felt very validated and excited that he waded his way across the Pacific Ocean back to fucking Skull Island.
Let's talk about the King Kong costume for a second, because obviously in the past King Kong has been presented...
what I'm cosplaying as for Creature Feature Weekend. Yeah.
Like, King Kong in the past has been a brilliant, amazing stop-motion creature. And this costume is such a cheap downgrade from that.
Bro,
but
nips were hanging low. You know, for Kong, he was sagging.
The fact that his mouth articulated made me so happy every time that mouth fucking moved. When he's like biting into electrical power lines and shit for no reason, I was just like, every time Kong was on screen, I was feeling happy.
Like what'd that mouth do? Every 5 minutes, he's like goading King Kong and Godzilla to just bite something.
Now, I'm pretty sure, I know that I watched the DVD that I had, and I think you guys watched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it was the same thing on YouTube, which is that we watched the Americanized version of the film, which starts with an American newscast covering what's happening in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Super unnecessary addition. Like, it provides nothing to anything, really.
It was, but it was also maybe one of my favorite parts of the whole movie is when we just keep jumping back to the newscast of what's going on.
It was helpful for me, at least. I mean, it kept me entertained.
Yeah. It did. It kept kind of like reminding me, like, oh, hey, we're here. We're doing this thing that sometimes I think with because I used to watch these movies a lot as a kid too. I can't imagine I watched King Kong versus Godzilla, but my grandparents showed me a lot of Godzilla movies, and like there is this sort of disconnect that I remember having, and that was probably just me being a kid. But like watching the movie and then going and playing for 20-30 minutes with whatever toys were out, and then like go hearing an explosion or hearing a thing, and then be like, oh, Godzilla's back, right?
Yeah.
Like for this was the adult version of that for me. Being like, oh, the American newscast is back, letting you know what has happened. Yeah. It was a weird like bodily response to, or a mental response. I wasn't. Come on.
I mean, this movie was made in the early 60s, which has its positives and its negatives.
Mm-hmm.
On the negative side is some of the casting choices for indigenous people of Skull Island, but on the positives, we get some shit that I will never get tired of. And one of the things that I will never get tired of is just seeing those toy tanks rolling out and being melted by Godzilla's fire breath and being it's those tiny toy figurines, it is just like the most joy that I have as a person watching, because I'm just like, I love this. I was reading a bunch of stuff. I forgot to write this down in my notes. I was reading about the thought process behind it, because like, there was something in all of the research I was doing on this movie that said that when they showed this movie years later to people, they would laugh at that. And like some of the older people who were there, who had worked on it, like was like, I mean, I'm glad that you're laughing, but like we had to do what we had to do with what we had.
Mm-hmm,
and this was just the way to get to where we were trying to get to. At that point, because like they only made a couple movies a year, and like there was only this much special effects budget and this much whatever. And now it's like, it's kind of iconic. Like you can't separate a Godzilla movie from those tiny tanks. I think immediately of the Godzilla scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And it's like the first thing before you even see Godzilla is the little toy tanks rolling out as the foot stomps on it. Like,
well, right. And you think of the generations of product that has come out since then that has reflected that. I mean, for like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers for me is like, you know, maybe they didn't go to the full tank extent, but just the scales of everything. And it's like that type of effect. even in its cheesiness, has been continued and appreciated in some aspect, and it really does. It gave me the warm fuzzies the same way that you're describing, Matt. Like, I really just... And all the way to the end, again, watching the wave pool, like, the waves are gonna come up and hit this, you know, this beach town, I guess, you know? Like, and it was just so fun.
I would like to do more Godzilla in the future. This, I feel like, was the roughest one we could have started with, because it's probably got some of the most problematic elements.
Yeah.
But, like, I'll watch the shit out of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, or, like, any of those versus movies. Like, I just want to dive into some of them, because I do think that the kaiju films in general are a giant blind spot in our 450 episodes. Like,
it's absolutely true, and I think about that a lot. I'm like, you know, I really want to, but I also don't. I have no idea how to start. You know, like, I don't know where to go.
No, I feel the same way.
Of the Toho stuff, I think this is the first full Toho that I've ever watched. Like, I've watched pieces of a lot of Godzilla movies, but there's a reason why I don't really watch them, because I don't really... There's a lot of the human interaction that does not do it for me, but there's, like... They get really weird, especially in, like, the 90s, I think, and late 90s.
Yeah.
They have, like, these human mutants that are part of the... Yeah. Because, like, I guess Godzilla has... And the Titans have irradiated the world, or... There are all these task force, and... Oh, it sounds super fun. Like, there's just reading the descriptions on Wikipedia make me want to do more of these. Also, I mean, the modern kaiju movies do it for me. So
yeah,
sure, right.
Well, let's
why
put
not?
It out there, right? Like, we have people who listen to this podcast who are absolutely kaiju fans, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that if you are a kaiju fan, you let us know. What are you listen to our show, so you obviously know what our vibe is.
Yeah.
What are the movies that we should put into the highest level of consideration? Because I don't think we should do, like, Gojira, right? Like, that's, like, a really heavy, like, layered film.
Which
from
one is that?
The 50s. That's the very first Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
The original Japanese
that's
Godzilla.
That's not our vibe.
But, like, of the 70s into, like, the 90s and even the early 2000s Godzilla movies, where it's, like, still... I want it to still be the rubber suit. That's my one requirement, is if it's people not in rubber suits, I'm slightly less interested.
But, yeah, like, and we have no real interest in doing the Matthew Broderick one, just, you know,
yeah,
FYI.
Yeah, let's...
We're mainly looking
who's,
for
who's,
Toho.
Who's we, Scott?
Yeah,
Matt and I. Two of three people.
But, you know, I thought that this would be a fun little, you know, I didn't think this was going to be, like, one of our all-time great episodes. But I did want us to tip our toe into some kaiju stuff. And with the Godzilla versus Kong movie coming out, I figured, why not? Let's give it a shot and call upon the audience to let us know if we ever did another Godzilla movie. Where should we go? Where should we go?
Hi, friends. The world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while, because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm. Available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Now, what's a double feature that
Matt,
any of us would want to...
You picked this, right? Or is this a Matt pick?
This is technically a group thought pick, but I'll take the hit on this one.
Why don't you kick it off for us?
I'm going to go with another versus movie that I can't believe we haven't covered on this podcast, which is, of course, Doll Man versus the Demonic Toys.
Of course.
You know, everybody was thinking it, Matt. you know, everybody was pretty sure. That's a great versus movie. Okay.
I've never seen it. And I've also never seen Doll Man. So, wait, there's a Doll Man movie first, right?
Yeah, there's Doll Man. So Doll Man versus Demonic Toys is an interesting movie because it's an hour and 6 minutes long, and it is a sequel to Doll Man, to Demonic Toys, and to Bad Channels. So the first 30 minutes of this 66-minute long movie is recapping all three of those movies for the viewer to be caught up.
That's economical. Everything. That's what we're talking about right there. It's just economic.
Yeah.
That's
called having
band.
Good Charles bandwidth right there.
Yeah. Ooh! Damn! New t-shirt design. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Kyle, what about you?
I kind of mentioned it before, but I think I would like to watch the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie.
Which one?
This.
The just one with Elizabeth
like the,
Banks in
the,
it?
The first one. No, the first one. I've not seen the one with Elizabeth Banks, but
I liked it. I truly enjoyed the one with Elizabeth Banks in it.
I just like you know, the show has so much of, like we were talking about, the effects of this. I want a kind of like a fuller version of it. And King Kong 76 may not be the follow up to this, even though I love that. I think I suggested that for a double feature
recently,
a while ago.
Yeah,
but recent, like kind of like relatively recently.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my double feature. What about you, Scott?
Well, I. Would it be cheating if I said Godzilla King of Monsters from, was that 2021?
No,
not at all.
That's probably my favorite kaiju movie of the ones I've seen. I really, really liked it because it gives me the things that I want out of a kaiju movie without a whole... I mean, it still has the human interest side of it, but it's not... annoying. It's not like 50-50, which I think a lot of the Toho stuff really is, like maybe 70-30. But you know, the Godzilla remake and then the modern ones, that the American ones, I have found that the rewatchability of King of Monsters is really great because it kind of gives you a taste of all of the awesome kaiju that have come up through, that they brought from the Toho material. But it was really hard not to go with Pacific Rim because Pacific Rim is more ridiculous. Like, it takes itself less seriously. You know, like, and Pacific, I think I've watched both of those equally. Like, probably five times minimum, which is crazy because neither of those movies are a decade old at this point. Well,
yeah,
right?
That's
the fucking minute Pacific Rim is 10 years old. I think
Pacific Rim was 2010. I think it's...
No!
Pick it.
Oh, my God. I feel so old. I have to look it up.
Guys, now. In exactly 1 week, you can come and meet us at Creature Feature Weekend.
That was good.
We will be there. It's April 19th to the 21st. We'll be there. We're going to be doing a bunch of stuff. I don't know what yet, but there's going to be stuff, and we're going to be doing it. In the meantime, check out our website, hmnpodcast.com. Hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/hmnpodcast. And lastly, we got to talk about what we've been watching, what we've been discussing, and I want to start because I actually have a What Did I Watch This Week that weirdly could have also been a double feature for this movie. Just dropped on Shudder this month. I never got around to watching it. and I really enjoyed myself. I finally watched Ghost Watch from 1992.
I almost suggested that as my double feature too. Yeah, I almost did. I was like, it kind of works. It kind of
weirdly works.
But it doesn't, it like just format wise, it doesn't quite work enough for me for like vibes. But like,
yeah.
Yes, yes. Oh, I want to hear what you think.
So the thing that's interesting about Ghost Watch is that there is a world where I would say that this movie is boring most of the time. Mm-hmm. But I think that the boring parts are what makes it so effective as it continues going on. And like the more you read about how specific what they did was for this, it's like, okay, I get it. Like they full on created a War of the Worlds like moment for the UK by literally casting the trusted news guys from that time to play themselves in this Halloween special that goes off the rails. Like, so like the elements of that are awesome, but literally it's not the scares, although some of the scares are really effective. It's not the scares that I think about afterwards. It's like just thinking about these moments where they're just rewatching footage and like, because someone called in and said, oh, I think I see a figure in the background. And they're watching the footage over and over again, trying to see the figure. And then they're like, oh, I think it's actually a shadow from here. Because that's so authentic to like, if they were actually if this was a real thing that was airing for real, that's exactly what it would be. Mm-hmm. It would be them killing time, trying to like take callers' theories and then trying to research that theory and prove or disprove it. So like, the way that it kind of has that chill mood and then it just ramps up in the last like 10 minutes into pure insanity is really kind of cool. So yeah, I mean, I was very excited to see that it was finally coming back to Shudder so I could finally watch it. And I was really surprised how much I liked it, because I expected to think it was like okay, but kind of dated, but I really had a good time watching it. Nice. That's it.
Nice. I'll jump in. I've been reading a short story collection. I think I might have shown it here. I can't remember if it was Patreon or if I had done it on
I think you mentioned it, but you didn't say what it was.
So I mentioned I blindly bought a short story collection called Pacifier. And the cover is bright pink with a banana half peeled, and the exposed half of the banana is bloody. I was like, that's pretty provocative. Like, I'm pretty interested. It's very short. Just like a pocket book, really, of short stories. But it's by an author named Ira Ratt. And I just finished it last night. And it is really interesting. The interest in sort of Barker-esque, like the body horror of Barker is there. A lot of really, really cool ideas that I think work as a short story, could not work as any longer, but they kind of just like, they're just ideas that are kind of like stuck. It's hard to say that like I feel like they were successful short stories, because I feel like they are meant to be exactly that length, and I've enjoyed reading them. Like, I don't think that like Ira Ratt is necessarily, at least from what I've read here, and there's another short story collection at the bookstore that I go to that I might pick up if it's still there. But it's really cool to see a writer that is clearly picking up on things that I've enjoyed, or that you know that people have enjoyed as horror readers, and trying to apply them to their own stories. And it definitely felt there's one particular story about it's told from two perspectives, one of the doctor and of like a clinician, and one of the patient who has just been wasting away for a year but shows no signs as to why they're wasting away. And then as soon as they start drinking their own blood, there is a totally like different world to them, but they are sort of cannibalizing themselves, and it's this sort of toss up. But at the same time, it's a cool premise, and then it just ends. So it's like everything is there, and I want to read a little bit more, but not that much more. You know what I mean? So it's a very cool, and I think it, you know, it's an indie publisher. I think it's called Filthy Books. Like
Filthy,
you know,
Loot. I looked it up because
Filthy
I
Loot.
Wanted,
thank you.
I added it to my Goodreads. Now that I'm actually utilizing Goodreads,
I'll bring it to you when I'm done. But it, you know, it's cool. I mean, like I can really visualize a lot of what is being told, which is cool to me. You know, it's not so, you know, you were talking last week about a novel that was pretty dense. And I think sometimes when I get into the density of it, I lose sight of like how my brain can build it for me. You know what I mean? How my brain can translate
what's
energy, being on
mental
page.
Energy, I think. I mean, it is a lot when of I was energy. Reading Leech, it felt like it was work. And that's all, I mean, like,
yeah.
And that's fine. I think that there is definitely a place for that. Like, I want to make my brain, I want to make my imagination work, but sometimes.
Agreed.
You also want to be able to have the reading be just pleasurable. So I think yes. That's where you're at.
That's 100%. Thank you for putting that into words, because that's exactly what I feel like. I mean, I as a filmmaker, it's the same way I watch movies. Sometimes it's like not that fucking fun. You know what I mean? Because my brain is just. Doing too much. And that's why, you know, sometimes we get into that modality on the show. Like when we watched It Follows, I feel like that was sort of, you know, I turned on the brain. But then sometimes when we watch things like Toxic Avenger Part 2, I'm able to like, you know, so I've said it before and I'll say it again. Always grateful to be talking movies with you guys, because sometimes my brain can just be a viewer and not in, you know, in high mode. Anyway, that's Pacifier by Ira Rat. If I end up being able to pick up that other short story collection, I'll probably report back here just to see where we land.
Okay, cool. All
right.
And Scott. I have another book to, but another book review as well. This is becoming horror book night. I read this before Leech, but I just was talking about other stuff before that. But I read Monstrelio by, and I apologize if I butcher this name as well, Gerardo Samano Cordoba. And he is, again, a debut novelist. And this story is about a family, a mother and father, a young mother and father, I mean, you know, 29, whatever, whose 10-year-old son dies. And and that happens in the first page of the book. The mother cuts open his body and takes a piece of his lung. She's just like, oh, this is mine. He's my son. I'm taking a piece of his lung. And then she is told by, she goes back to Mexico and her mom's live-in housekeeper finds the piece of her dead son and goes, you know, that's not the weirdest thing. Just don't feed it anything. And she's like, what? And she's like, well, I shouldn't have told you anything, but, you know, there is this kind of like this folk story in my hometown where, you know, this woman fed a piece of her dead lover's flesh, you know, and it became another person. And so the mom feeds the lung and it becomes this kind of monstrous creature that is kind of wild, but then it starts to grow human characteristics, and it's more of a study of grief, which was very it was very difficult to have that, you know, going through my brain as I was going through my own personal journey of grief at that time. Very well done book. It's kind of what I've been saying about how horror is just the vehicle for us to talk about grief so much of the time, and I find that very interesting. And this is more like a rumination on grief instead of like the grief being implied. It's really the main character of the book, honestly. Very, very well written, and I can't recommend it enough. I think that of the book talk books that have come through my orbit recently in the last couple months, this is the best one. Very, very, very
nice.
Good.
Nice.
All right. Well, hey, when you come to Creature Feature Weekend, bring us your book recommendations as well, because we would all love to hear it.
We'll trade you. I'll trade you a book.
Yeah, book. If you got books, you go. I'll bring a bunch of books, too. Yeah, we can barter. That'd be fun.
Consider us a small. No, no, I was gonna say consider us a little free library, but no, we got shit for sale. Don't, there, well, no, you're
you
buying
can buy
shit,
it or you can
we
trade.
Can trade. If you want we can to. Trade, but
yeah, what? Bite your tongue, Kyle. But we'll be back next week with even more horror movie night goodness. So see you then.
Hi friends, the world got you down. Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.